I came across a humorous article about traffic problems in India. Now, those of you who have seen pictures of traffic in India, it's probably not very humorous because it makes Boston traffic look like a walk in the park. But in one eastern highway in India, they began having a new kind of traffic problem. Apparently, one cranky elephant had been stopping cars in the middle of the highway. And he would stop them and he would not let them pass until he was given food. And so once they gave him food, he'd let them pass. But he was also known to stick his trunk in the car and sniff around, I guess to make sure that he wasn't being cheated of the good food. One local resident called it an old-fashioned holdup. And authorities, I read in the article, are now trying to figure out what to do about a cranky elephant in the highway. So they're trying to manage that situation. Now, I'm willing to bet most of us do not have an elephant problem, but many of us have things that we see when we look at the news or when we look at the world out there, and we look at them, and it just makes us upset. We're thinking, that does not seem very fair. I remember when I was in my first job, I was a dishwasher. There we go. That's a picture of me in my first job. I was a dishwasher at a butcher shop and a deli shop combined. And I was so excited after 2 weeks to get my very first paycheck. And when the paycheck came, I looked at it and I was shocked because I noticed a third of the paycheck was missing. And so I went to my parents and I told them about the criminal activity that was happening, that I was being exploited for the work I had put in and not being paid what I was due. And my parents told me something that has carried on even now, many, many years later. They said, Kyle, that's taxes and Social Security being taken out of your paycheck. And I said, what? Taxes? And so I was not happy about that, but in all seriousness now, taxes and elephants may not be something that we think is unfair or that we're upset about, but just a quick glance at the world shows us that there's a lot of unfairness out there. There's a lot of stuff out there that where we think, oh, no, it should not be like that. And so how do we as Christians reconcile the fact that we have a loving, caring God, and yet we live in an uncaring, unseemingly unloving world? How do we reconcile that? And we're going to see today that Solomon had some of these same problems and made some similar points that we make thousands of years later. And so we're going to see if we can learn a little bit from him, from what he mentioned back in chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes. And so let's go ahead and dive into our passage now, starting in verse 16. And here's the first thing that he says, that under the sun, so under the sun meaning here on earth, people suffer. So one of the injustices is that people suffer. He says in verse 16, moreover, I saw under the sun that in the place of justice, even there was wickedness. And in the place of righteousness, even there was wickedness. Now that word that is given in the English as justice can also be translated as judgment, referring to what a judge would do when he's deliberating a case. And so if the person deciding a case is corrupt, then the entire judgment is messed up, isn't it? If the judge is not giving a fair assessment of things, then whatever he decides is not going to be good. And so that's what Solomon is pointing out, that in the place of where there should be fair judgment, meaning justice, instead, all he sees is just wickedness. But even where there should be righteousness, and that word righteousness refers to what is right or accurate or fair. So even where there should be fairness in one area, what does he see? He says he also sees wickedness. So to paraphrase what he's saying there, He's saying this world's messed up. This world's messed up. I read an interesting study about judges and their rulings based on what they ate. And so in a 2010 study, researchers tracked 8 judges in 1,100 parole board hearings over a period of 10 months. And the judges averaged 22 years of experience. And this was their findings. They said the chances of a prisoner being granted parole depended on the time of day that the judge heard the case. And so prisoners' odds of getting the parole granted was high in the morning right after breakfast. There was a 65% chance of being granted parole. I took note in case I end up in prison one day. And then for the next few hours, it plummeted, and the chances of getting a favorable parole hearing started to continue to go down, but it was then followed by peaks and valleys. And so the chances of it being granted parole went back up at 2 distinct periods in the day. First of all, right after the judge's mid-morning snack, and then second, right after lunch. And so the article concluded, they said, to put it bluntly, the judge's ability to make decisions was about as reliable as a kindergartner who needs a snack break. And these are the people who are deciding between right and wrong in our society. Now, I'm not picking on judges here. I'm simply making the point that we already know when we see it with our own eyes that imperfect people cannot judge perfectly. And so when imperfect people try to judge, what's the result? It's injustice. It's injustice. And so surely, when we look to the Christian, to the religious realm of things, things would be better, right? Unfortunately, not always. Ravi Zacharias was a prominent, well-known Christian apologist. He was revered. He wrote books. He spoke at big conferences. And he died last year. And then reports started coming out that he had harassed, abused, and raped women. And over the years, an occasional person would speak up about what he did, and that person was hushed. And then in addition to that, it was that person that was made to feel like they had done something wrong. So Solomon is summing up what we see. He's summing up this world correctly that we see as well, that in the place of righteousness, even there was wickedness. Even there was wickedness. Now, sadly, after the suffering, it just gets worse. Let's look at the next few verses. In the next part, we see that under the sun, so in the earth, people die. So they suffer and then they die. Verse 18. And I said in my heart, with regard to the children of man, that God is testing them, that they may see that they themselves are but beasts, animals. For what happens to the children of man and what happens to the beasts are the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath, and man has no advantage over the beast, for all is vanity. All go to one place. All are from the dust, and to the dust all return. Who knows whether the spirit of man goes upward and the spirit of the beast goes down into the earth? So I saw there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his work, for that is his lot. Who can bring him to see what will be after him? So what Solomon is saying here is that he was in the midst of this experiment looking for meaning in the world. And he saw people accumulating things and working hard. And then he noticed that people just go and what? They die. The death is just ending all this stuff that we're working for. And then he also noticed, he looked at the animals. And what did he see? He saw that they died. And then he looked at the humans, and he saw that they died, and they all ended up in the same place. That verse 20 where he says, all go to one place. He's not talking about their salvation. He's talking about just the literal, where do people go when they die? They're buried in the ground. And so he's saying that we're ending up like the animals here. We're ending up in the grave, in the ground, just like them. Verse 20, all are from the dust, and to the dust all return. And he says in verse 21, who knows whether the spirit of man goes upward or downward is what he's talking about there. He's simply saying that there is this air of uncertainty from an earthly perspective about death. That death is just this thing that we've never experienced until we experience. And once we experience it, we can't go back and tell others what it's like. And so there's this uncertainty about death. You can't control it. I was reading this week about how several billionaires are very concerned about death as well. And so they're putting in a lot of money to try to stop it. And so billionaire Peter Thiel invested heavily in an organization called the SENS Foundation, S-E-N-S, and it's devoted to developing rejuvenation technologies. So the article says that so far, nothing has panned out. William Ondrej is the founder of a Silicon Valley nanotechnology startup, and he claims that he has plans to live, quote, for millions, billions, hundreds of billions of years. Is that all? Sadly, the company quietly went out of business recently. Russian multimillionaire Dmitry Iskov launched the 2045 initiative, and it promises that humans will be immortal by the year 2045, as soon as we, quote, make a leap into artificial machine bodies. Billionaire Larry Ellison gives millions to the Ellison Medical Foundation to understand lifespan development processes. And this is what he says about death. He says, death makes me very angry. It doesn't make any sense to me. Death has never made any sense to me. How can a person be there and then just vanish, just not be there? So that's coming from the billionaires and what they're focusing on. But you know what? What they're thinking and what they're wanting to do is not too different from what our experience is as well. That death has this uncertainty from a human perspective. There is this uncertainty. And as Solomon is saying, it just does not seem right. There's an injustice to it. Now, we'll talk more about that in a few minutes, but let's talk about one more injustice that Solomon points out at the beginning of chapter 4, where he talks about under the sun that politics does not save. So look at verse 1. Again, I saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold, the tears of the oppressed, and they had no one to comfort them. On the side of their oppressors, there was power, and there was no one to comfort them. And I thought, the dead who are already dead more fortunate than the living who are still alive. But better than both is he who has not yet been, for he has not seen the evil deeds that are done under the sun. Or if you skip to chapter 5, verse 8, he says, if you see in the province the oppression of the poor and the violation of justice and righteousness, do not be amazed at the matter. And he goes on talking about it coming from the political people. So Solomon, this is ironic considering he was king, but Solomon says that much of the oppression comes from the people who are in power. And so what he's saying there is that verse 1, they had no one to comfort them. In other words, those people who look to others for comfort, so the ones that are looked to for comfort are actually usually the ones who can't or do not help because the oppression is coming from those people in power. Or maybe it's not coming from our people in power, but we see people in power in other parts of the world who are the ones oppressing. And then you put all your focus into getting rid of them and they just keep popping up. For example, in the early 20th century, Stalin and Hitler. And we went to war to get rid of one of them. And once we got rid of Hitler, everything was perfect, right? He was gone. But someone else, somewhere else, popped up and continued to oppress people. Later on, there was Chairman Mao in the 50s to the 70s. There was Kim Il-sung in the 50s to the 90s. There was Fidel Castro. There was Ho Chi Minh. There was Saddam Hussein, and on and on and on. All these powerful leaders leading to just more and more injustice. And so that's why Solomon says in verse 2 here, he says, I thought the dead who are already dead more fortunate than the living who are still alive. So they didn't have to go through and see all the suffering that's out there. So that's as far as we're going to get in our passage this morning. But I just want to review what Solomon talks about, these three different types of injustice. And first of all, he talks about how there's horrible injustice out there, notably suffering. There's horrible injustice out there. Second, he talked about how death stinks. It stinks, but it happens to us all. But third, he says that earthly leaders can't completely fix things. And so oppression just continues. And so what's the answer to all of this? So with each of these types of injustice, with each of these, I want to show you that all this injustice cries out for a better king, who's Jesus Christ. All this injustice that we've just talked about, it is crying out for a better king, Jesus Christ. Verse 17 of chapter 3, I said in my heart, God will judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time for every matter and for every work. Or if you skip to chapter 12, the very end, some of the last verses, he says, the end of the matter, all has been heard, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man, for God will bring every deed into judgment, with every secret thing, whether good or evil. So this is important as we talk about Jesus being the judge of things. We've just looked at a very depressing chapter as we've continued through the depressing Ecclesiastes about what's going on in the world. And we've heard about billionaires agonize over the injustice of death. And listen, if we stopped right there and there was no further remarks about it, then yes, you would have every right to leave this place depressed. But what Solomon is trying to establish is that in the midst of all this depressing stuff that's going on, that we can see clearly with our eyes, is that this world is depressing, it's filled with unfairness, but in the midst of that, peppered in to these depressing facts, Solomon points to the reality that we are not at the end yet. That this is not done yet. We'll take just a quick break here. And I want to take a little cake break. How many of you like chocolate cake? Go, Ray, come on up here. We haven't had you up here in a while. I will have fond memories, Ray, of your first time up here when we were drinking baby bottles. But no baby bottles today. Come on up. So we're going to have some chocolate cake. I have one for you. Are you allowed to have it or is it?
Oh, yes.
Okay. All right. So.
I give myself permission.
We have this cake here. Go ahead and hold this. Oh, yeah, just leave. Okay. So you can have your spoon and your cake, your bowl here. And this is dark chocolate fudge. That is some good stuff, right? All right. So let me see if I can open this. I should have opened it ahead of time, but okay, this is good enough. You know, we'll get some of that in there. You think that's good?
That's plenty.
Okay, and all cakes need eggs, so we're going to put this in. Good. And we'll put that in there. And then you can go ahead and start mixing, but it's missing an important ingredient here. No, oil.
Oil.
So here you go. You think that's...
Oh, that's plenty.
There you go. That's good. Just mix it in. Mix it in.
Okay.
Now, it is also missing something that goes really well with cake. It's almost ready. Keep stirring.
Cream?
Close. Yeah. Ice cream.
Oh,
I have some ice cream here that I want to give you. And we'll Go ahead and put that in. There.
Oh, that's
all right. Do you want some more?
No, another
Here.
One. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's great.
All right. All right. Well,
It's almost like a pudding.
Let me know what you think.
I think it's got the makings of a good cake.
So go ahead. You can try it.
That knows I will.
All right. Well, we'll stop there then.
All
before
right.
I think what he's noticing. Oh, you're leaving already. All right. Hold on. Here. You can have this. You can have a finished product. And for Pat as well.
Thank you.
Don't get it on the carpet. All right, here's the problem with my cake, which I think would be a pretty good cake here. But the problem is that you can't judge the cake until it's finished, right? You can't judge it. So you shouldn't even be eating it right now with the oil and the eggs slopping around and everything, because it's not that it's a bad cake right now. What's the problem? It's not cooked. It's not done yet. And likewise, as we look at the world around us and everything bad that's happening, yeah, there is horrible injustice going on. But what we're seeing right now is we're seeing an unfinished, uncooked world right now. We're seeing a world that has not made it to the end. So Solomon saw this horrible injustice and the horrible leaders and the horrible death and all of this stuff. And we see that right now as well. And we're like, this just isn't fair. And what I would propose to you is that you need to just stop. You need to stop and realize that the world we're in right now is, yes, it's depressing. And it feels like this sometimes, where it just feels like the batter is just sort of slopping around in our life and there's oil and eggs. But that's because it's not done yet. It's not done yet. And one day, when Jesus returns, this cake of a life will be made much better. So here's the point I want you to see, that when Jesus returns, every injustice that we cry about right now is going to be made right. Every injustice that I just talked about, and those three summary points that Solomon is saying, the suffering and the death and the political oppression, all of these things are going to be made right when Jesus returns. First of all, we see that in Jesus, injustice and death will be ended. It's going to be ended. And so when Jesus returns, the injustice that we see right now, of that sloppy batter kind of life, it's going to stop. The death that we see that brings so much sorrow to our life is going to be ended because of Jesus returning. Revelation 21:4. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. So when Jesus returns, when he's on the throne, then death is going to be a thing of the past. That injustice that right now we're crying about, and rightly so, but that injustice that we see is say, it should not be like that. And Jesus is saying, you're right, but just wait till I come back. When we look at that pain and that suffering out there in the world, or the pain and the suffering that we've gone through in our life, then as we're crying about that, we can look towards a day when all of that will be gone. So the cake of life is not finished yet. And one day, injustice and death will be a thing of the past. But we also see that in Jesus, there is a perfect heavenly king. There is a perfect heavenly king. We had a problem, or we have problems with political leaders that oppress us or that do not fulfill what they say they will do. But when Jesus comes, that will not be a problem anymore. He will fulfill everything that he says he will fulfill. In our day, leader after leader is going to disappoint us. Oppressors are going to come to power, and they're going to just continue to increase injustice. But when Jesus returns, he will be the perfect heavenly king that we need. In Revelation, he is called the Lord of Lords and King of Kings. And so when you put those two words together, it's saying that he is the ultimate. You say the King of Kings. He's the ultimate king. He's the ultimate. He's the greatest king. And that is what Jesus will be when he returns to us. And so, church, former President Trump could not save us. Current President Biden will not be able to save us, but when King Jesus returns, he will save us if we've put our faith in him. And so, if we have put our faith in him, then we are in the right, we are under the right king. And if not, I want to give you this challenge and even this warning. You don't want to be on the wrong side of King Jesus when he returns, because as Solomon says, he will be the one that's judging, and he will judge fairly. And so how should we respond to a message like this? I want to close with a story to give you something to think about here. This is a story about Franz Reichelt. He's an Austrian tailor, and in 1912, he created his own parachute. And so on Sunday, February 4th, 1912, he climbed to the top of the Eiffel Tower to test it out. A couple weeks before, another inventor had done the same thing. He had gone to the top of the Eiffel Tower and tested out his parachute, but he had used a test dummy. Here comes Reichelt, and he stands for pictures as they are clicking those pictures away. He says, "I am so convinced my device will work properly that I will jump myself." What could go wrong, right? So the other inventor of the parachute, who had sent a dummy down the Eiffel Tower a couple weeks prior, pulls him aside, and he tries to talk him out of it. And he says, "Don't do this." And the discussion gets heated, and finally Reichelt walks away. And so we have this guy that a friend tries to stop him. And then he had done previous tests on his homemade parachute, and they had failed. He had used the dummy previously, and it turns out that with his dummy, it had crashed to the ground. And so he decided to go through with his experiment. Now, just a little bit of background here. A modern parachute uses 700 square feet of fabric and needs at least 250 feet of height to descend. And his parachute had 350 square feet of fabric, and he was jumping at a height of 187 square feet. So again, what could go wrong here? So instead of listening to the advice of experts, and instead of listening to reason, and instead of listening to experience, he stubbornly goes ahead with his test, jumping off of the Eiffel Tower. And so he jumped, and 4 seconds later, he hit the ground at 60 miles an hour, making a dent 6 inches deep, and he died on impact. Now I want to ask you, he wouldn't listen to reason, but what about you? What about you? We have Solomon thousands of years saying that this world is not all it claims to be. And he's saying there is suffering out there, and we need to look to someone who is beyond the sun. And so we have Solomon here. We have your pastor up here saying the same thing, that we need to look up to Jesus as the one. So I want to ask you, are you listening? Are you listening? And the Bible says that if you will confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, that you will be saved. So if you will turn to Jesus even right now, And I'm not saying that the injustice in your life is going to go away. I'm not saying that your pain and suffering is going to go away. But in the midst of that, you can have Jesus to hold on to give you hope and comfort as you go through these difficult times in your life. And so, are you going to listen? Don't be like Reichelt. But second, maybe some of you or many of you have done that. Are you like that friend? Are you like that friend who is begging the people, don't do it on your own? Don't do it on your own. You're saying, now, I know that what you're trying to do is not going to work. And so I want you to see this. I want you to see the way and the truth. And I want you to know that Jesus is the way to true life. And so are you being a light to those around you? Are you being a witness for Jesus like that friend was trying to do for Reichelt? I think we would all agree that life is difficult at times, and that life can even stink at times. But when Jesus returns as the perfect king and the perfect judge, he's going to make everything right. So let's make sure you have the right Lord and Savior. And church, if you're not already, let's make sure that we're being a light to those around us. Amen. Let's pray.